Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 40 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. They have got a really cool giveaway coming up later this month, mid-March, so stay tuned. I'm going to do a full post on the site. Now, today's episode is featuring an artist that I just wrote about. She sent me a quick note to say thank you and to say how much she likes listening to the podcast. So I immediately wrote her back and said, great, want to be on it? And so here we are. I am talking to German-born, UK-based Susanna Bauer. She is the genius that embroiders on leaves. Yes, leaves. I wanted to hear her whole story and any secrets that she might be willing to share about how she does what she does. So let's do that, shall we? Colleen Cornwall. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Danielle.
Nice to hear you. Good morning to you. Yeah, well, good evening to you, I guess.
It's afternoon. It's 4 o'clock here in the UK.
Okay, 4 o'clock. So I've got my morning coffee. I just woke up. And I quickly made coffee. I've got a big 8 written on my hand, so I'd be sure to be down here by 8.
Well, I've been waiting for you. I've even tidied up my studio.
Oh, good for you. Wow. That's a good excuse. I would love to see what your studio looks like, but that question is coming.
Okay. I can describe it to you a little bit if you like.
You have such a cool accent. Is that like German and British mixed together?
Yeah, I guess that's Bavarian because I come from the southern region of Germany, which has got quite a strong accent within the German. And then that mingles with nearly 20 years of British English. So that's what you get now.
Wow, it's fantastic. Because I thought, oh, I guess she'll sound German, but you kind of don't.
I don't know.
Well, it's so nice. I love it. I mean, I've known about your work. I think I wrote about you in
4 years ago.
Yeah, 2012 or something. And it's so nice to hear your voice and to get to know you a little bit better.
And for me, it's very funny because I've been following you for years and now started listening to the podcasts and just it almost feels like I kind of know you a little bit because I've heard your voice.
I know, it's
in
funny,
the other interviews, but yeah. It's amazing. So thank you very, very much for inviting me to come along.
Oh, of course.
On the podcast ride.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm so excited to hear your story. So you sent me that interview, that written interview that you did a while ago, and I started to read it and I thought, no, I don't want to know the answers.
That's why I asked you if you wanted to have any information beforehand, and I wasn't sure. So
yeah,
ask away.
Okay, ready? Okay, yep. So I want to know where all of this started. Did you go to art school? Did you study design? Where is your background?
Well, it's not that straightforward, really.
Okay, good.
I've got to go quite far back there, really, because it actually started way back in my childhood with the whole love for making. I've always loved making things. Mm-hmm. And I've learned knitting, I've learned sewing. My grandmother was a seamstress. My mum was a very keen knitter. So I've kind of grown up a bit with the whole kind of craft side of things. Mm-hmm. And I just remember sitting on my grandma had a really big old sewing machine, foot pedal one, and oh. I would sit underneath there and she'd give me scraps of fabric and I would make stuff out of that. And I've just always loved making things, and even I've always loved making small things for whatever reason. And I remember making little landscapes into matchboxes with constructing little houses in there with tweezers and things
oh
like that.
Oh my gosh.
It's always been a bit kind of very small, yeah, what I've liked doing. And also the landscape, the being outside. I've grown up by the side of a forest. And then when I was 11, my parents moved and I lived again close to fields and woods and lakes. And so I was kind of always immersed in a natural environment, cycling everywhere and just being out a lot. So that was kind of the basis where I've grown up, and I've did some holiday jobs in garden centers. Just always loved planting things and the excitement of seeing a carrot grow in my grandmother's garden and things like that was just always with me. And then after school, I decided to go and study landscape architecture, which I've known about because my mum's worked with a landscape architect in the past, and that just seemed kind of a natural fusion between a kind of creative interest and the natural world. So I started that. Did a lot of practical experience with it. Went to France, worked in a botanical garden, worked in different kind of landscape architecture studios. And then, but what was always there was the making didn't get much of attention there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had at that time connection to the film school in Munich. And I started helping out on film shoots. Mm. And I met two guys who had a very small special effects studio. And I just thought, oh, this is interesting. And through them, I learned about the whole profession of model making. I just thought, oh, wow, this is interesting. I'd like to know more about this.
You so put yourself kind of underneath a sewing machine and started making little things again.
Not quite. It was slightly different. I did an apprenticeship. So I dropped out of the college studies for the landscape architecture and started doing an apprenticeship in a company that did models for industrial designers. And that was 3 years of training, learning how to work with all sorts of different materials. And that also, again, went very precise. So models had to be down to a tenth of a millimeter. And so I just loved all this again. But nature took a back seat in that time. And so after I've done the 3 years apprenticeship, I was also doing a bit of side work with the special effects company, and I started doing more film work and actually doing models and props on a science fiction film. And I really got into that side of things. So that was all about the making and learning techniques and just, learning the creativity of the making, really. And then, Munich was getting a bit too small with that because I wanted to expand and go more creative than what could be done in the industrial design field. And that's when I made the step to London, which was quite funny, really. I had for quite a long time a list of model makers in the UK sitting on my table. There wasn't much happening in that sense in Germany at that time. That was in 1996. And then I just thought, well, just go and have a look. Barely any English. Quite an adventure. And put myself a portfolio together of images that I had and went with a big map and a rucksack to London on a holiday. And that was also before mobile phones or much internet use or anything. So I literally just went and knocked on doors.
Wow.
Just to discover what was going on there. And I just loved it. I had a week of so many really interesting encounters and people who would show me workshops and projects that they were doing. And I just thought, right, that's it. I go back and I handed in my notice, quit my job, packed my bag and went off to London.
Oh my gosh.
So that was that. And then I started working pretty much straight away. It was really nice because once I made this decision, right, I'm going to do this, I'm going to follow this calling, I go and see what this is all about. Things just clicked into place and I started that career. And that took several years. And again, there was a lot of learning, but it was also a very, very stressful environment, very tight deadlines, working around the clock. And it was the other side that just kept saying, you know, I need more of my own creativity. It's all very big city, very very industrial, very un-nature.
Mm-hmm.
And what came in then was that I met my partner, who at that time, or still, well, we're both living in Cornwall now, which is the very far southwest of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very beautiful landscape, very close to the sea, very wild. And I had for many, many years, I had two lives. I had a London life with model making and very industrious and very fast living, really. And I had in between jobs, I had the other life coming down to Cornwall, soaking up nature, breathing that side. And over the time, I need to give this inner creativity that wants to come out more, my own kind of making impulses. I need to give that a bit more time. Attention. And I thought, I've always toyed with the idea of going to art school, but never really thought, I'm not really artistic. I can't really draw. that wouldn't really work. because drawing was never my thing. I've always just been making stuff. I've always felt more 3D and material orientated. And I happened to find a course that was part-time at a college in London, at an art college in London. And I went for an open day and I just thought, oh yes, this has got to happen somehow. That's where I need to be. It's funny because life has sent me at certain points, certain opportunities and things to follow up.
But you also jump.
And I jump.
Yeah, because some people get those opportunities and don't go for it. And it's cool that you've sort of, you know, you've picked up the messages in the wind and gone.
Well, not quickly, though. I'm a slow jumper.
Yeah. Put the first toe down.
I just walk around this and go kind of in agony almost with an opportunity. I remember that time when I saw this model making list in London, and I thought, oh yeah, that would be cool, but oh no, can't speak English, too far away, don't know anyone. No. And it literally took, I think, at least 6 months until that list became a plane ticket.
Right. That's still pretty quick.
Well, and with the whole, well, the college thing was a bit quicker because there was an application deadline.
Right. And so what did you study there? Like, what did you take?
It was a fine art, an art foundation.
Okay.
It's basically something that people straight out of school start when they want to orientate themselves, what they want to study.
Mm-hmm. We have to do that in Canada too.
But I went in there after many years of practical, actually living within an environment that many art students actually want to get into, which I got in sideways through a very practical experience of model making.
Right.
I've even worked with artists. I've done models for Damien Hirst. And so it's kind of in the back route.
Wow, that's crazy.
And so I went there purely because I wanted a challenge of finding out what this little inner thing is that I was carrying around with me. And yeah, I've always made things for myself. I loved making presents for people. I've done little market stalls with things I made. But that wasn't the direction.
Right.
It's just that I always had this going on.
How old were you at that point when you went to do that program?
That was in, oh, I've got to think about that. I'm now nearly 47. That was in 2007.
Okay.
What was I do then? Yeah, not that long ago.
Wow, really. That's really cool. Okay, go on.
And I got the place. I got the portfolio together with all different various bits I made. And I went for an interview. And then I said, oh, I don't know. What was really nice when I got in, though, was that because it was just one day a week, and I carried on my day job. I worked as a model maker just as I did before. But somehow, and I hoped that would still work, suddenly cutting down to being a freelancer for 4 days rather than 5 or 7 days a week availability.
Mm-hmm.
But that worked, and jobs kind of arranged themselves around it. And it was really nice because it was a very, very nice combination of people, a lot of mature students, a lot of sideways people that came in from other careers or did that on top of something else. So I made
that's so nice because it's so rich. Yeah.
We were there, or a lot of us were there first thing in the morning when the course started, 9 o'clock. We were outside the door, and I was among the last ones who got sent out of the library before it closed in the evening. I just soaked it all up, and I had specifically one tutor that I really clicked with. And I just loved it that the briefs were so loose, and I just discovered a lot of things there, and a lot of it was set in motion, I think, in that little. This was 2 years that I did that,
mm-hmm.
And the first seeds of the work I do now started there.
Ah, that's what I was just going to ask.
Yeah, there was a project that had to do with the containment of experiences,
mm-hmm.
Which fused. Which kind of brought together the experience that I had with the country, with the nature here down in Cornwall, and I brought that back to London, and it started from there. Started with works on stones and sticks, and then the leaves came in, and that's the beginning of it.
And the embroidery and all of that was because of your growing up with your grandmother.
That was just something that was just always there.
Yeah. And had you always done that? Like, had you always continued to knit and things like that during all of your London stuff?
I never had much patience to do actually something properly, like a jumper or something.
Right, like you didn't have time, I'm sure.
Also, funnily enough, I'm a bit impatient with that.
Really? Oh my God. That is not what I would guess by looking at your work. But anyway.
It's kind of, it's different, but I used to do a lot of socks because that was an instant gratification. I'd be on the train going down to Cornwall and making some socks.
I've made a lot of quarters of scarves.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
So how did, I love your stones and sticks, by the way, but how did the first leaf happen?
The first leaf happened because, well, down here, that it's the climate is really mild. It never goes really that warm, but it also never goes cold. So if there's the vegetation down here is pretty amazing. And I love going to botanical gardens and just walking around anyway. And I collected leaves just as I did twigs that I like, pieces of driftwood that appeal to me. And it just seemed like a natural progression mm-hmm. to work with a leaf. And I can't honestly say where this idea came from to go 3D with them, but I remember making the first cube that just did something to me. It looked really quite rough. It was a really wobbly affair, the first cube. But I remember making that in an evening, and it just sat there, and I just thought, ooh, this will go somewhere. Don't know where. So we go somewhere.
So the first one was a cube.
And the first one was actually, the first one was an edge. It was an edging around the edge of a leaf, a bit of crochet around there.
Did you think that you were a genius when you did that?
No. No, the thing.
I would have been high-fiving myself.
I've heard a really, really lovely talk by someone called Elizabeth Gilbert.
Yes.
And she was talking about the genius, and
that's such a good talk. Yes,
have you heard it?
Yes,
you know it?
Yeah, I've listened to it several times,
and I think that's that feeling. I think I can relate to that very much. Of this, something's come along, not something that I did, but something somehow entered, something's mm-hmm. appeared.
Yeah,
and that's what it felt like. That although I've made this thing, but it wasn't really very planned as such. Yeah. It just came.
That's amazing. And beautiful and magical.
Thank you.
And I want to know how many leaves you've wrecked. Because how? Now, don't give away your secrets. But
the question how comes a lot.
Yeah, like I can just picture them crumbling in my hands. Like it just blows my mind that you can make them.
Well, the thing is that I think with the whole making part of it, that's where my past comes in, that I've had many, 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 many years of training of my hands.
Yes.
So in order to work very, very still and precise, and there isn't a secret to it. I don't coat the leaves with anything that makes them stiff or anything like that. I just work very precisely with small tools, and there isn't any kind of special trick with it at all.
It's just you. You're the special trick.
It's just me.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. I want to just try it just to see how crazy it would be if I tried. I don't have very steady hands. I actually have quite bad arthritis in my hands that showed up out of nowhere when I was about 38. Yeah. And so I still do a little bit of embroidery on my work sometimes, but I have to work pretty hard.
Yeah.
Because it hurts my hands. And so when I look at your work, I just think, ouch, first of all. And I think it's so funny that you said you're not a patient person, because you must have to be patient. Or is it just very meditative when you work on that?
It's a funny thing, because sometimes when I look at my work and I know myself, I just think it's very strange, because I am what I would describe myself as quite a chaotic, messy person. But the work, the work isn't really like that. It works. So in a way, the work kind of doesn't. Well, maybe it shows a side of me that, is somewhere different.
That's really cool. Well, that's crazy to me.
You'd probably think I'm a person that really lines up all their pencils on their desk when you look at my work.
Well, you know, totally what I was going to ask you, if you can send it. Well, you said you were tidying up before the call, but I assumed, what with the German and the precise work, your workstation.
You should talk to my partner. He always just says, you're the messiest person ever.
So what do you do? Do you just push all the mess out of the way so you have one little tidy area to work?
I do it occasionally. I get spurts of making everything clean, but I do at home and at the studio. It's very much like, right, I need a bit of table. Push it all away.
And so when you go into a piece then, which I assumed again, making all these general assumptions about you, that do you go in with a very precise plan of what you're going to do to that leaf, or do you sort of let the leaf talk to you, or how does that come about?
I think it's a bit of both. What comes with the leaf is some of the new works are a development and a progression from previous work that I've done, and sometimes it happens like with the first leaf cube that something just suddenly comes along and wants to be made.
Yeah.
So there isn't a real clear, this is like happens so or this happens like so. It just comes along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does that happen in your studio, or does that happen like as you're falling asleep or waking up, or when do those moments come?
Sometimes an idea comes and pops in when I see a particular leaf, or when I look at it as an exhibition, or I look at a book, or I see a shape somewhere, or sometimes it's also when I think about people, or I think about relationships, or I think about connections, because that's also what comes through for me in my work, that mm-hmm. it's not only about actually doing something to the leaf, but it's also the combination. It's the connection between the elements that mm-hmm. I use in my work. And yeah, so sometimes it's a little bit like a very tiny story
mm-hmm.
that I want to express, or a relationship, or a connection, or a dialogue between two entities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love some of your newer pieces where there's two leaves attached together, or there's that that one with I think a group of five of them where they're all connected in the middle.
Mm.
So that's beautiful.
That's a fairly recent piece of work.
Yeah, just so gorgeous. And are you still doing stones and sticks, or just leaves right now?
I'm just the leaf work is the one that really draws in the most of attention at the moment. I've started going back to some more pieces with wood, but I'm not sure where this is going at the minute. But I think that's what gets a bit more attention again now.
Well, it definitely has a wow factor, that's for sure. I have we live in the country, and I have sticks and stones and things all over my house, like sort of propped up in corners, and I have this one. I'll send you a photo. I have this one in our bedroom. That has these two like knobby things on it. And when I first found your work, I was like, ooh, I want Susanna to knit around it. Because you do have a piece like that, right? Where you've sort of knit around those lumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I always think of you.
Knit around the branch and leave out the interesting bits.
Yeah.
Like little windows to look in.
Yeah. And I have a branch that looks exactly like that in my rooms. So every time I look at it, I think of you. And even I will even more now. Mm-hmm. So are you... Do you not have a day job anymore? Are you a full-time artist now?
The day job changed when I became pregnant 6 years ago. Mm. I had my boy. So I'm now not having a classical day job anymore. I've got my artist part of the day, and then I've got the mother part of the day.
Ah, I know that well.
I know you've got how old is your
I have child? One boy, and he's nine.
Nine, yeah. I remember hearing that on another podcast. That mm-hmm. you've got probably. So you know that well, that kind of.
I know it very well. Yeah,
it's not always easy.
No, and they are very different worlds. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, sometimes then I appear straight out the studio in front of the school gate, and I find myself in quite a daze because I've been thinking about something very, very different.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's, oh, whoops, yeah, what are we doing now?
Yeah.
Where are we going?
I know. Don't forget to pack the lunch. And
yep.
Yeah, I know. And so, yeah, so that was, he's six.
He's six now, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so are you, I know that you're showing and things like that. So how did that start to come about?
In a similar way, like everything else did in my life, it's been kind of a gradual development of opportunities that came along. And funnily enough, my first solo show, no, it wasn't my first, it was the first solo show in the UK, came about through me doing, I had the feeling I wanted to do some ceramics. I wanted to learn how to throw pots.
Mm.
Don't know why. Always liked the feel of clay, and I just wanted to learn that. And the person who was running that little pottery course that I signed up for is a very well-known ceramicist who we just got started chatting about my work, and he then recommended me to the gallery that he's showing with. And they then contacted me and offered me a show.
Wow.
So it was just like a little bit like that. And then it just went on from there. And another show that I had came about through a magazine article. A German magazine wrote a little feature about my work, which happened to be in, I think, a dentist or a doctor's waiting room where a curator picked it up, saw it, and then rang me asking me if I wanted to put some work in a mixed show, and then I sent some images off, and it ended up another solo show.
Oh my gosh!
In Italy, and it was just opportunities that happened very, very, very nicely. So I feel that I'm very lucky with the way these things have come along, and then progressed from there.
Wow, that's just what a great story! I love that you're just kind of. I mean, you're not lucky you're busy sewing leaves together. That's, and you're creating such unique, special work that is so, I see it, I instantly know it's you, you know, it is so unique and special.
Thank you.
And you're working hard. So these opportunities, of course, come along because you're working hard. But I love that you kind of are just letting the universe kind of guide you.
That's very much what it feels like. But I do put the time in. I do, yeah.
Yeah, my dad
spends a lot of time.
I would always say, you know, oh, I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky. And my dad always said, this is my dad advice. My dad always would say, yeah, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And he's right.
But it's not always easy because sometimes I do know those points sometimes. That, so what do I do now? What comes next? I don't know. What am I going to make next?
Yeah.
And, I just sometimes have to tell myself, wait, just turn up, just carry on, just do something, even if it's just pushing all the mess aside that's on the table.
Yeah, you know, that is so true. You just have to keep moving forward. It's when, you know, when I did Creative Block and got all the answers back from all of the artists, that's what they all said. You just have to keep moving forward. The moment you stop, you know, like the moment you quit or, you know, whatever, obviously everything else is going to quit.
But also I think with sometimes just carrying on, and you don't necessarily always have an end point in sight. You don't know what's going to happen. And I guess that must have been similar with you when you first started The Jealous Curator, that you didn't know that it would lead you to curating shows and writing books. And
no, not at all.
Making your own art and doing all the crazy, wonderful things that you put out now.
Yeah, no, it was just exactly what you said, sort of, I just felt like I needed to do it.
Mm.
For me, I never thought I didn't think anybody would ever read it besides my family and me, you know, and everything that's happened, I say to my husband all the time, just pinch me, like, how is this even happening?
Yeah.
You know, it was never a plan, but I think if you follow, and I'm like you too, it's so funny, like, I'm this fall, so Jell's Curator turned 7 on Monday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Really on your post, yeah.
And it's still not my full-time thing. So it's taken
really?
Me. That's why when you said it took you 6 months to jump, I'm like, oh, it's been 7 years.
And it didn't take 6 months to jump off the full-time work.
That's true.
It took me 6 months to decide that I was going to go somewhere different.
That's true. For a responsible job. See, that's the thing.
Going freelance in a city that you've never really been at and not having a full-time job, but relying on other people giving you jobs when you need them. I guess that is a bit of a jump. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a jump. But yeah, I sort of feel like I'm at a stage now where it's like, okay, this thing that started as a thing I just had to do, you know, but I am very responsible. So I've always had a day job and I've just always, you know, been super responsible. And now I've finally gotten to a point where Gels Curator can be my job. And I'm so excited, but nervous. But I'm just going to let the universe, like, that's how I've always done this. I've always just, if opportunities come up, I say yes and I figure it out later.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the way to, you know, continue to propel yourself forward, basically.
It is scary sometimes.
It is.
Sleepless nights sometimes.
Yes, there's been a lot of those, and I'm sure there's a lot of those to come. But, you know, I think you have to trust. And I think that's what sounds like what you've done all along. You've just sort of trusted. And even like the ceramics course, you just put yourself in these situations that lead to other situations.
Which was never I just purely did that because I was following some, like a lot of times before, some inner little calling, something that interested me, something that I thought is something that I want to be doing. And I might come back to that again. And just...
Only good can come from that.
Unexpected.
Yeah. Only good can come from when you follow things like that, because those little, maybe it is, you know, like Elizabeth Gilbert talking about, maybe it is that muse that's telling you, you know, go do this. And so what do you think is next for you?
Well, next I've got in March, I've got two shows that open, one here in the UK and one in New York.
Have you had a New York show before?
No, this is US first.
Are you going?
Yes, I can't go for the opening, but I will be going to see the show a little bit later.
Oh, that's so exciting.
So I'm very excited about the whole fact of seeing. I'm living in a very, very small world, so I'm just very excited to see what it's like.
Yeah. Are you bringing your son with you? Or are you just going to go on your... Yeah.
No, the whole package.
Oh, that's so exciting. Oh, you'll have to give me an update after that and let me know how it all went.
No, I'm very, very excited and very happy to have this opportunity.
Oh, I wish I was going to be there at the same time.
No, I would love to meet you.
I know, me too. I'm sure we will at some weird point. I'm actually leaving for New York on Saturday, but I'll be home well before you come. But
yeah.
Oh. Okay, so the only thing I have left for you, dun dun dun, speed round.
Oh no.
I know. I think you actually kind of answered some of them already. Okay, but I'm just going to go for it. Ready?
Okay.
Stones, leaves, or sticks?
All of them.
Oh, I thought you were going to say leaves. Okay. What is on, you're not in your studio right now, are you?
I am in my studio.
Okay. Yeah. What is on your studio table right now?
Well, how long have you got?
See, I thought you were going to say one leaf and a jar of pencils.
No, there's my glasses, some crochet hooks, some leaf rose, a stick, some sanding paper, bottles of water, some knives, paper, computer, bits of office stuff, thread, glasses cases, pins, cables.
Oh my God, I love it. Will you take a picture of it and send it to me so I can put it in the post?
No,
you don't want anyone to see it. Okay, fair enough. We'll just imagine your beautiful mess and call it a day. Oh, that's hilarious. Okay, and just so you know, my studio looks exactly the same. It looks like a bomb went off, so it's okay. Favorite food?
Favorite food, ice cream.
Oh.
But is that a food?
Yeah. What kind?
Vanilla.
Oh, really? I'm a big fan of things with chocolate chunks and brownies and things in it.
Oh yeah, I go for a subcategory with chocolate.
And then finally, what's your favorite way to work? This is a multiple choice question. A, in silence. B, with music. C, other.
Mostly in silence and other. I do like to listen to things, but that depends on what I'm doing.
Like what things? Like to have the TV on or have a podcast on or?
Like Jealous Curate the podcast.
Oh, well. I was going to push for that, but I thought, no.
I just love listening to talks, like TED Talks I like.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, me
but
too.
A lot of the time it actually is silence because I need to somehow quieten my mind in order to do what I do. And I'm very bad at multitasking. I can't, what normally mothers are supposed to do really well, I can't. I can only really do one thing at a time properly. And that's why even listening, when I'm concentrating on a piece of work, even listening to something else mostly doesn't work.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's sometimes in with the making process that do allow that. So I do listen.
I find that I can't listen to music with words.
That is a funny thing. And that's where, for me, the whole being German comes into it, because even though I've lived for almost 20 years now with English all around me and speak it every day and everything, I can turn it, I can switch it off and it can just be noise. I don't have that automatic, I need to listen to it. I do have that when I listen to my mother language, and then that is something I really, it goes in.
Right.
But I can't stand in a crowd of people all talking, and I don't have that, I need to listen.
Oh, that's interesting.
Whereas if it's my own language, you can't help, you just listen, it goes in.
Right.
And I'm not sure if that ever changed, but I think that comes with living in a different language.
Mm-hmm. This was so nice. I can completely picture your messy, beautiful leaf-filled studio. And it's just been so nice to hear how this all happens and that it is, in fact, not magic, that it's just your skillful hands making it happen.
No, there's no magic. It's just, I think my work comes from, and a very, very, very big attention to detail and, a very slow process, I think.
Mm-hmm. I would love to watch work one day. That would be amazing. I'll just sit behind you. What are you doing now?
I probably couldn't work. I can't work without being watched. I couldn't even pass my driving license with the driving instructor behind me taking this test. As soon as I'm being watched, then I would probably break something.
Okay, I promise I won't sneak in there then. Well, good luck in New York and have an amazing, amazing time. And please report back.
Thank you very much. Yes, yeah. I will.
Okay, well, thank you so much for this. And hopefully we get to meet one day.
That would be really lovely. And I will carry on enjoying what you put out.
Oh, and same to you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Okay,
bye. Daniel. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yay. Oh, that was so nice.
Really nice. Really nice talking to you. Thank you,
too.
Very much.
It's so funny because I was like, I don't know what to expect. Like, your work is so precise. I thought, I wonder if she's going to be very, like, precise in your answer. Like, I didn't know what to expect, you know? And it's just so funny that you're so... I love that that's the work that comes out of you.
I'm sometimes surprised myself. I'm sometimes looking at the pieces and I just think, where did that come from? But it just it carries on. There's another piece and another piece and the ideas keep coming.
Yeah. Isn't that great? Like, it's so cool when you hit, like, I'm loving those little collages that I'm making right now with the paint on them.
They are wonderful. They are absolutely beautiful. They make me laugh every time I see them.
That's my plan. But, you know, I feel like I'm never going to get tired of them. I've never felt like that with work before. Never.
And I think that's the best sign that something is right and something comes and comes from within and is the right thing to do when it just keeps coming and you don't have to, it's not a strain, it's just there and you have the feeling like, I want to do more of it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying when I was asking, you know, when you see where your ideas come from and, you know, if you see a particular leaf or if you, and for me, I'll go to thrift shops and flip through an old book and I can flip through and if no ideas come, I put that book back and I flip through the next and there'll be some books where I flip through and I can see like 8 collages. You know, and there's other books where I see nothing and I don't even bother buying it, even if it's 50 cents, because I think, I don't think there's any stories in here for me.
And I've got a whole big collection of leaves that I can really relate to that. And some of them are hung up, some of them are in boxes. And occasionally when I don't quite know what comes next, I've got a big table in here and then I just put it all out and I just tip out some leaves and start moving them around and then things happen.
Yeah, that's the same with me. I just, sometimes when I've got no ideas, I just cut the stuff out of the books. And so I've got boxes and bowls filled with pre-cut, ready to go little people and things. Yeah. And I have no idea. And then same thing, I'll just go and sit in there, put them all out on my big messy table and just push them around and wait for a story to show up.
But do you have that feeling that you have to have them around you?
Yeah.
You have to have that, even though if you're not making something, you might have that box of people sitting there like, for months and never open them, but they need to be there somehow.
Yeah. Yes.
And yeah, if you have, I don't know, if I've got times when I haven't been to the studio for a few days, I get really strange. I just think I need to be here. I need to reconnect. I need to just potter around in here, need to do something. I'm missing them.
Me too. I get uncomfortable kind of.
Yeah.
And I need to just get in there. And sometimes I have little lamps in there, so it's quite warm lighting. I just go turn them on, take a coffee in there, and then I just push stuff around. And it's very comforting.
Yeah.
And usually if I've got it, well, you know, with having a kid, sometimes it's hard to get that runway where, you know, like if you do get going, you're going to need hours.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I just don't go in there because I just know I don't have that 3 to 5 to 10 hour runway that I want. But I start to get itchy and, you know, uncomfortable.
I can very much relate to that. And sometimes when I've got an appointment or something is in the middle of my work morning, I can't really get going.
Same.
I know that in about an hour, I've got to come back. I've got to go out for half an hour and then I need to go back. That doesn't really work.
I feel exactly the same way. It's like if you allow yourself to get into that zone, I just need to keep going.
Although saying that, sometimes it actually is, actually thinking about it, sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes it happens that I've been in the studio for a good part of the day and I think, yeah, I've got to get going in about a half an hour. And then sometimes it happens. Then something comes along and I get really, really grumpy that I've got to leave. And I just, oh no, just something's just happening. I don't want to go now.
Yeah, for sure. And then, but then you come back to it and you're ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that or something. I can sometimes do some work very, or something that I want to start or get together quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I might be really taking a long time on another day, something then when there's time pressure on, something can come together fairly quickly.
Yeah. You know, a lot of artists I talked to for the book said that they purposely put deadlines on themselves. Like they need that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I'm kind of half and half with that. Sometimes that works for me. Sometimes it just freezes me, you know, depending on what I just did a piece for a show and it had a tight deadline. And I just felt like a deer in headlights. I was just like, I have no idea what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And then one night it was right before I fell asleep and I just got a picture in my head and I was like, there we go.
That's it. Yeah.
And then all I had to do was find the time to make it because the picture was already in my head. So I didn't even have to go into the studio and play around. Like I knew exactly what I was going to do. I just needed, you know, the 5 to 7 hours to go in there and make it. And then I did and it's done and I'm dropping it off today.
So do you sometimes picture, because your images very much tell a story, do you think ahead of what people react, how people might react to that or how that will be perceived? Or
before I make it?
what triggers what might what you might trigger with it? Yeah, when you've got an idea.
Well, the new ones, the way the new ones are working, I'm trying to be really, really free. So what I do is I just put a whole bunch of paper out and just make random brushstrokes on all of them. And then, and they look like nothing. They just look like blobs or whatever. And then I start digging through my little people and wait for one to make sense with a paint swatch. Yeah. And it, when I do, the minute I do, the little story pops into my head. So I'm not really thinking about what people are going to think. This is the first time that I've never cared about the audience. I just am making them because they make me laugh and they make me happy. And I love, I've always loved telling stories. And so, and then I just started, you know, I've been, my new book, I've, there's a chapter about sharing. And I mean, I'm so bad about sharing my work. So I'm trying to practice what I preach. So I thought, right, I will start putting these silly things out on Instagram just to see, you know, just to practice sharing more than they, I mean, I was really proud of them, but it was more just to practice sharing. Well, people go crazy for them.
They are absolutely fabulous. And have you ever had them in an exhibition, actually physically hung up somewhere?
No, I just started these at Christmas. I decided that over Christmas, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I decided that over Christmas I was going to do a collage every day just to force myself to be in the studio every single day. And I've been, and there was no plan for paint or anything. And then it was the first day of Christmas holidays. Charlie was home from school. And again, I was lying in bed in the morning and I had this picture in my head of a blob of paint with a tiny little dude standing on it.
Yeah.
And I haven't painted in years. I've got lots of issues around painting. And I thought, okay. So I told my husband, I said, listen to this weird idea. So I went into the studio and I got out my very old paints and just started making blobs. And all of a sudden, like all this, I think I made over the holidays, I think I made 23 pieces.
Brilliant.
And so I just haven't stopped. And I like what you said, like ideas just keep coming and coming and coming. And so I've actually had a few galleries reach out and ask if I would show them.
I was wondering about that because it's just, it just really screams to be a show, really.
Yeah, well, I think I'm up at to 40 now or something. And I haven't said yes yet to anybody. I don't know. And people keep saying, are you going to sell these? Are you going to sell these? And I keep saying, yes. I don't know. I just need a moment, I think. I think I've never made work that makes me really happy and makes me satisfied. So I think I just need to roll around in that for a tiny bit longer before I exhibit them or sell them. I don't know. It just doesn't feel quite right yet.
How it started for me was the first ever thing on the wall was at college, at that final year show, which seemed really quite bizarre to hang something up and then stand there and people looking at things.
Yeah.
And then I did an open studio show locally here with my partner. He's an artist as well.
Oh.
So we did a joint little exhibition in those. It happens every year here. There's Open Studio Week where there's a little catalogue goes out and people can just wander around and go into people's places. And we did that at home. Paul was converting his an apartment at the moment and at that time, and it was all empty. It's just an empty shell. And we did that was the first Open Studio show that we did together. And that was the first time I've sold little pieces of work, and I never actually meant for that really to be the aim. It was just to get a bit of a practice with, let's put something out, let's show something and display it nicely and see what happens. And it's so interesting.
Yeah, like I've been in lots of shows and I've sold lots of work, but not this kind of work.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't know what, like, I don't know why I am hesitating. Is it because I feel like they're like my little babies and I'm not ready to let them go? Or I'm not sure. It's just really odd. Like, I mean, I'm so happy that people are liking them as much as I like them. But this is literally the first time I've ever felt like my work was truly me.
So what other work did you do before?
Well, I painted. I was a painting major in university. So I had some shows after university and sold a bunch of stuff. And then I've had a bunch of collage shows. I've been in quite a few group shows, and I had a little solo show in Seattle. And those, I mean, I was proud of that work too, but it just, it was like I was always trying to get to a place that I couldn't, it was very frustrating because I couldn't figure out how to get there, you know? And I feel like this work is there. This is what I've always wanted to, I think it's the titles, you know, like I need, they're That's just really as much what, part of it as everything else.
Well, in some ways they make the work.
They do.
The work looks, the pieces look beautiful as they are, but with that added level, they're just really, really nice.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was always afraid of. I was always afraid of making funny work because it wouldn't be taken seriously. So I always tried to make these more serious pieces. That just wasn't me. I'm not a very serious person. You know, I can be, but I, generally speaking, I'm kind of a goof. And I always resisted that part of me because it didn't seem like that would fit in the art world. And it was really interviewing Wayne White in the fall for this podcast, where his work is humor-based. And I mean, he's had a lot of flack for it, but he also is like, I don't care, you know?
Well, I guess ultimately you can only do good work when it comes from within and from when it actually is truly authentic, when it's in some ways detached of whatever goes on outside there.
Yeah. And I think that's what's finally happening. So I think maybe that they're very personal in a way now because... Because it is the sort of first four, I mean, I'm 42, and to finally, like, I've been making, same as you, you know, I've been making work since I could reach my mom's art table. My mom's an artist too, and I would steal her stuff when I was two, you know? And so, you know, it took 40 years for me to finally hit a place where I feel really good. And so I'm not sure what my hesitation is. I think I will show them. I can see that. I feel like that's coming. I'm just not sure how and when that will happen, but I'm very much like you. I just sort of let the universe guide me, and
the right thing will come along.
Yeah, when it feels good in my gut, I do it. You know, and I think that's coming, and I'm just going to wait for that to show up.
Yeah, definitely.
Ah, kindred spirits. This was so great, your work is even more, like, you know, it seems even more special to me because, you know, now I know the woman behind it.
Well, it's funny that it's now it seems you're very close, but you're very, very far away, and it also my work is very close to me, and I'm living in a very, very small world around here, and it now is at a point I'm speaking with you just before a point when it's going out into the big word.
Yes, it's so exciting. What a cool point to talk to you. Well, we'll have to do another one when you're like so super famous that you can't even be bothered to talk to me anymore.
Don't even think about the next step.
I know, me either.
Right here, I'm very happy that all the work arrived safely in the States, and that it's there, and it's that's as far as I'm looking at the moment.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, well, give me a shout after that because I want to hear all about it.
I will.
Okay.
I will.
Okay, have a lovely evening.
Thank you very much.
You too.
And you have a good day, and good luck with everything that you're up to.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
No wonder her work is so lovely. It's made by such a lovely woman. I loved every minute of that interview, but Susanna sent me a podcast remorse email the next morning, which does happen from time to time. She said that there were things she really wished that she talked about, so she wrote it down, and I'm going to read it. Unfortunately, I can't recreate her beautiful and unique accent, so you're just going to have to imagine that part. Okay, here we go. The how is it done element of my work, I guess, is a first and immediate connection point for someone who sees my work. But what I find far more interesting is what can happen next, when the work draws a viewer in, slows someone down to look closely at the detail of how it's made, but also how intricate, delicate, and fragile the leaf and nature as a whole really is. And also how fragile we are as human beings, subjected to the tensions and pulls in our connections and relationships, where I think the making technique of crochet becomes a nice metaphor, as it is all about tension. For me, it's a new way of having a dialogue with the natural world and opening up a new way of looking at our relationship with it, paying attention to the very small. I've often seen people walking past my work with a quick glance, but then going to do a double take, turning back and taking the time to look. And sometimes they walk away with a smile or start a conversation about what it makes them feel, and a connection has been made. And if it makes someone walk away a little bit slower and look a little bit closer at what surrounds them, even better. And my work is also a daily reminder for myself to do just that. Beautiful. And with that, I'll say thank you to Susanna for doing this with me. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting the episode. And as always, thank you so much to you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.